talking to your girlfriend.
Sorry.
This is a professional environment.
Okay, how's your...
Wine bags, please.
Also, let me pull out my notes since we're so professional.
Oh, this is so gross. I'm so nasty. Sorry.
Christine's literally squeezing the bladder of her boxed wine. It's sadder than just having boxed wine. It's really squeezing for the last drop of the bladder.
It's like the guts of the wine.
Yeah.
If you say bladder one more time, I swear to God.
But you said guts.
I know. What's happening?
You want to know what's happening?
Yeah.
We have an assistant. We have our very own.
And it's not one of our significant others and or pets.
Yeah, for a long time we were pretending Allison was an intern. And Blaze is probably the in-house intern. But now we officially have an assistant.
Guys.
Her name is Eva.
And she's a gem and a half.
She's a Pisces.
She's a Pisces. It almost sounded like I said Gemini.
That's what Pisces got into my head. Do you want to do a little shout out? Say hi.
Woo-woo!
There she is.
She exists. We're not making her up.
Yeah. For a second, I was like, what if people are just like, okay, nice try, guys.
No, we got ourselves up one whole assistant.
It's for real.
And
guess who showed up with lollipops and wine?
Yeah. At her interview, she literally brought me caramel apple lollipops. And then today on her first day, she brought Christine red wine. So
it's like,
we knew.
She had our hearts from day one.
She knew what she was doing.
P.S. Just like a sly little ad for ZipRecruiter. That's how we found her.
Yep. That's how we found her.
Just saying.
Also, within about 10 minutes, Gio was like in her lap. So I think everyone here has warmly embraced her.
That's what I was thinking is we should have done the interviews just as like...
Just come stand in front of our dog.
And see what happens.
Yes.
And she aced it.
She aced it.
Most people don't, so...
What a life you lead, just sitting on the couch watching us perform.
Perform. Quote,
this is practice for our live show. I'm just going one person at a time.
Next week, we're going to add another person to the couch. And then
one day, the whole couch will be covered in people.
The whole two-person couch.
But so we are getting a lot bigger, and a lot of things have been happening.
Guys, so much exciting stuff.
So Eva's definitely going to take a lot of load off of us because we were hyperventilating at how much work we had. And yeah, I know you guys just hear a finished, polished project.
So polished.
At the end of every week, or at the beginning of every week, depending on what kind of person you are. But there's so much stuff that happens behind the scenes that we were losing our minds a little bit. So,
and Eva is very talented.
So thank God for Eva.
And professional, unlike us.
Day one.
So she's
so
here.
Far.
This is her first recording sitting in.
She is. And we've never had to do a whole episode in front of someone before. So this really is a practice for our live shows.
It really is. She's already watched me drop the mixer, pour wine out of a bladder of a box, not
and
understand
mess up the audio.
How the audio worked. It's been a really nice evening.
Yes.
So welcome, Eva. It's too late to back out now.
Do you have a reason why you drink, Eva?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, something brown on your nose, Eva.
Oh, no.
I can't tell if this is a positive or negative reason why she drinks.
She's already texting her boyfriend.
She's like, get me out of here.
She's like, help, SOS.
Why do you drink, Em?
I drink because this week was the first time I ever had poutine.
Wait, seriously?
Yeah.
You went without me?
I went. Oh, you're going to Alcatraz without me? Weird. Right,
touche.
Allison took me to the Canadian restaurant in my neighborhood, and it's called Spuds, and we had poutine, and I loved it.
You'd never had poutine before?
Mm-mm.
As much as you talk about it, I would have thought you ate it every day.
I just knew inherently I would love it, but it was so tasty, although we had the very Americanized versions of poutine, because I had a Philly cheesesteak poutine.
Jesus.
And Allison had a fried chicken and bacon poutine.
Oh my God.
So did I have poutine? I don't know. But it was really good.
You had Los Angeles or Pasadena poutine.
Yes. I also drink because I get to puppy sit Gio this weekend.
That's right. House
it's
sit.
It's going to be a wild time.
You and Allison could play house.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Also, 8 days left until Avengers. So really, it's a real party type of weekend.
Also, can we talk about how CrimeCon is in 2 weekends?
Yeah. Can we talk about how I don't have a lot of propranolol left? I'm going to have to go back to the doctor.
Well, I will say that our show or our recording is like the first day, like one of the first hours. So it'll be over with and then you won't have to worry about it for the rest of the weekend.
That's helpful.
And if you guys want to come see it, it's not too late to use our promo code ATWWD to buy your ticket or buy a 1 day pass for Friday. And then we're doing a meetup in Nashville at the Broadway Brew House Midtown on Saturday, May 5th at 8 p.m. Central Time. So be there or be square. And that you don't have to go to CrimeCon to go to that.
True.
Yeah.
And also our mothers will be there. So you can get real weird with. But that's also going to be the weekend before Mother's Day.
And it's Cinco de Mayo.
Wow.
It's a
lot of things happening.
It's an adventure.
Why do you drink this week?
I drink because you already stole my thunder, but I'm going to Alcatraz tomorrow and I'm so excited. Or Saturday, but I'm going to San Francisco tomorrow.
All right.
I'm super pumped.
I expect a full review. Also, you should listen to our episode and see if I was accurate.
Actually, I forgot. Yeah, I should go listen to it on the way there and then...
You forgot about our show?
Yeah, I forgot about it for a minute. I was like, where am I? What am I doing? Who are you? Yes. And also, I feel like I listened back to some episodes and I keep going, oh, and also, I also want to say, and it's just so
it's
irritating.
It's too late to change it.
I can't stop myself. We did a... This is, people have been waiting for this, by the way.
For a long time.
Long time.
We did. Long, long time. At least a year.
At least, yeah, longer than a year. We did a crossover episode. We recorded a crossover episode with Wine and Crime.
Yes.
Woohoo!
And we recorded two, technically.
Yeah, so they have an episode and we have an episode, all in the same recording session. It was the most fun thing.
What is the plan? Like, what day is it? It's already come out by this time?
No.
Okay, so it's coming.
Yes, we recorded it, but we have not released it.
Okay.
We're working on releasing it together. It was so much fun. I haven't laughed so hard in a very long time. And we also, I participated in the imbibing of the wine at
10:30 a.m.
10:30 in the morning. Everyone else was drinking and I fell left out.
Yeah, welcome to my world. Christine, they were all talking about their little routine that they do before every show and how they get their wine ready. And I could see Christine's little FOMO twinkling in her eyes. And so she sneakily grabbed a box of wine mid-recording. And I'm trying to swat her away from it, away from the microphone. Like, don't you, it's 10 in the morning. What is wrong with you?
Yeah. Yeah. But you enabled me. So here we are.
Yes.
But it was a fun, and then I had a tax appointment right after that. So
oh
that,
yeah, how did your taxes go? Did you lose money or make money?
I lost money.
I made money.
I don't know how that's possible. Are you sure you did your taxes right?
I have a tax guy.
So your stepdad?
Yeah.
Okay, let's discuss this later so the IRS doesn't flag us.
Cool.
Anyway, that's all I have to say. There's a lot going on here, though. We got a new computer. We got a new Eva. We got a new
couch. We have a couch in here now. Which Eva is sitting on.
By the way, thank you, Burrow, for that. And I aggressively bought like these pillows with our logo on them from our store.
Yep. So there's two of our logo as pillows on the couch and an Eva.
And an Eva and pictures of me and Gio all over the
wall. So it's a room of narcissism is what it is.
We are very vain.
So anyway, do you have any other updates?
No, I'm ready to just like
tumble into
get
this.
Scared. Tumble.
Get
tumble,
spooked.
Tumble downward.
All right. And everyone send prayers to Eva because the poor girl has to edit this now. Also, how do you feel about passing the baton as an editor? No moss for you.
I don't know. I'm scared to
relinquish the control.
I think that I'm scared to be like waking up at 3 a.m. going, I forgot something. And then realizing, oh, wait,
it will be fun for you, though, now as someone who just listens.
That's true, because now when I edit, I hear the episode immediately and go over in my head and like da 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 da. And then I don't listen to it when it's out because I'm like, I don't want to hear it for a fourth time or third time or whatever.
Now you get to enjoy it like the rest of us.
That is pretty fun.
Eva does not. Poor Eva.
We are sad for Eva.
Rest in peace, Eva's sanity. So, all right. Ready for a story?
Bring it on.
This one is from England.
Oh, I've heard of that.
Oh, good.
You said it so slowly, like as if I didn't know what England was.
No, well, we're not the best at geography, so who is to say?
Fair point.
This is in Essex. Do you know where that is, Geography Master?
Yes.
Do you?
It is in the vicinity of London.
Maybe.
Within a few hours.
Eva? That What? We're
she's like our new, like, she's like a, like an Alexa.
She's our Google. Yeah. Oh, she's like the thing that starts with an A and is a robot.
Yeah, we
but
can't...
this one starts with an E and is a human.
Yep.
Nailed it.
That's what we looked for in our job description. We need to be like a thing with like a human who's...
We need you to be like an Echo, but also just not one.
Mm-hmm. God, we're annoying. How long?
An hour?
An hour.
Wow, you are a little whiz.
It's like people think that I don't know what I'm talking about.
I'm that people.
I mean, I feel like everything in... I'm just going to throw this out there. I'm pretty sure everything in England is within a couple of hours of London. That's okay. Why I said it.
Valid.
But I appreciate that everyone applauded me for my intelligence. Okay.
We've lost every listener in England at this point, so it's fine. So this is the Borley Rectory. Okay. Mm. That's a weird face to start this with.
Mm-hmm.
You sound like you don't want to be here anymore.
Well, you said rectory, like, very weird.
Rectory?
Yeah, you said it like rectory.
Well, I don't know why. Sorry.
I was saying like rectal. Never mind.
Do you know what? Ugh.
I'm sorry.
We've officially lost every listener in England.
That's why I was confused.
The rectal
examination.
Haunting. No. Okay, so do you know what a rectory is?
Yes. My friend lives in a rectory.
Really?
Yes.
I did not. Do you know what a rectory is?
Church?
Yes.
Wow, you guys are good.
I'm a Catholic.
I didn't know.
Born and raised.
I'm a Jew.
My friend.
Never had to face a rectory.
My friend's, Alyssa's dad moved into the rectory and she had to like move in and live in one of the bedrooms there, and it had like crucifixes on the wall and like anti-abortion posters, and she was like, this is uncomfortable, and had to like remove the decor.
Okay, so for anyone who's like me and had no idea what this is, it is, according to Google, a residence of a minister provided by the church.
Yes. So they live in a Catholic one.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Got
it. The priest also lives there.
Got it.
It's really funny because Father Bob will like be in the kitchen eating...
Father Bob.
Eating Skyline, and we'll be like, hey, Father Bob. Her house is...
That's the most Cincinnati thing I've ever heard.
It's
Father Bob eating Skyline.
It's literally the most Cincinnati. Yes, it is.
Also, one strong memory out to Farmer Bob, who introduced us.
Cheers to you.
Cheers to Farmer Bob.
We always say like in memoriam, even though I'm sure he's still alive.
Like, he's probably still kicking, but in the future he might not be. So we might as well start the in memoriam now.
He'll die eventually. We might as well start.
You hear that, Farmer Bob?
We'll remember.
You're not here for very long.
No. Wow.
He doesn't even know who we are, which is the funny part of that. So
he's very important to us.
Moving on from death. So it was built, the Borley Rectory was built on the property where an old monastery used to sit hundreds of years ago, at least all the way back to the 14th century. And there was some scandal of the romance type.
Did someone show an ankle?
Kinda. A nun who lived there and a monk on the other side of town.
No.
Fell in love. And they tried to elope but got caught. And so the monk was hanged.
What?
And the nun was bricked alive.
What?
In the basement walls of the convent.
What? Wait, I'm sorry. Okay, hold on.
Only gets weirder.
Wait. Okay. So stoned means you get stones thrown at you. Bricked, I assume, does not mean that. It means you get bricked in.
Yeah, like they like lock you in.
Like alive?
With, yeah.
Jesus.
Like buried alive, but upright and with bricks and cement.
What is wrong with people? Why did he get hanged and she had to be bricked up alive?
I don't know. I really don't know. It's like the monk way and this is the nun way. I don't know. Ask your friend that lives in a rectory
I will.
Okay.
I'll tell her to be really careful.
I'm like in the middle of you eating Skyline. Is this what goes on in the basement?
Father Bob just lays down the fucking law. Yeah.
So that was one of two. Also, don't look at the other side of my paper.
Yeah, I see a lot of weird things happening.
At least you don't know what it means.
No, I have no idea.
There's like weird images, but I know you don't know what's happening.
I thought you like accidentally printed on the wrong side of your paper.
Oh, yep. Okay. Now there's a wall.
Oh my God, okay.
That I bricked a nun behind.
Stop that.
So also in the 17th century, the 1700s.
Just go with it. Nobody will know.
In the 17th century, so 300 years later, around, another nun named Marie Lair, she left her station and decided to live in the nunnery here. because she was at another convent and then moved to this one.
Mm-hmm.
While she was here, she met a man named Henry Waldengrave. Interesting that his last name has grave in it.
That is an omen for sure.
She met Henry Waldengrave, who owned a home on the same property as the Borley Rectory now stands. They got married, but one day Henry Waldengrave snapped and he strangled his wife.
Why?
Burying her in his basement. So now there are two nuns that have died in basements on this property.
What the fuck?
Jump far into the future of 1863.
Got it. On it.
This is where the Borley Rectory was built for the first time, and it was built for Reverend Henry Bull and his family.
Mm.
During the next three decades, by the way, the ghost stuff happens immediately. There's a dog.
It's okay.
Can you hear it? And it doesn't matter, I guess. Eva, delete this. or don't, whatever you think is funniest. Anyway.
Oh my God, go on.
1863. It was built for Reverend Henry Bull and his family. So the ghost stuff immediately starts happening. During the next three decades of the family living there, the family witnessed several supernatural experiences, including strange footsteps, growls, crying, and awful stenches that would appear out of nowhere above them and then disappear.
Above them?
Mm-hmm. Like if they were lying in bed, it would show up right above them.
That's nasty.
Blah, 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 blah. Townspeople said that the family was convinced they were seeing apparitions on several occasions, and all four daughters of Henry Bull's individually heard strange footsteps within the house and then saw an old nun walking in the yard.
Ew.
And as they tried to get closer and talk to her, she would vanish in front of
them. Why would you go talk to her?
I think they thought it was a real nun.
An old nun. I wouldn't want... I
don't know.
Maybe she looked friendly.
Several others during the Bull family's stay also swear that they witnessed apparitions of a nun, as well as a coach being driven by two headless horsemen.
Oh, okay.
But like so many people witnessed this.
Multiple people saw that.
Multiple times in a row throughout multiple years. Also that they have seen a nun and they've seen a coach being driven by two headless horsemen.
Okay. I have a really dumb question. Listen. English isn't my first language.
Oh my God.
So I'm wondering, isn't the headless horseman like a thing?
Yeah, Ichabod Crane.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Moving on.
Do you want us
to name this after Ichabod or something?
No, I just want to make sure that I'm not misunderstanding American culture.
No, a horseman is someone who drives horse.
I guess it's not American. This is English, but still.
Oh, wow. We've also lost every listener in America at this point.
I mean, it was bound to happen.
So, yes, your okay, English is smart enough to know what a headless horseman is.
Oh, good for me.
Okay. You're not wrong. So people began to see the nun and the horseman literally everywhere. Like, just saw them in the yard, up in the window, like, on the front porch. People just saw this nun everywhere. They saw the horseman in the driveway. They would hear horses in the driveway. They would see horse by themselves in the driveway.
He just had no head?
It's had no head.
It's just so bizarre.
And two of them. Like, they were twinning.
Once?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Okay.
So.
Twinning.
So people began to see the nun so often that they named the patch of the yard that she was seen in most often as the Nun's Walk.
Oh no.
So Henry Bull actually thought this was so entertaining that he had a ghost in his house that everyone knew about.
He thought it was entertaining?
He thought it was entertaining.
Sure.
And he liked the nuns so much that he literally built a summer home behind the house that looked over the nun's walk where he would smoke cigars and talk to her.
Talk to the nun.
That wasn't even there. Like, he'd be like, nun, nun, and she wouldn't show up. But he would smoke cigars and talk to her.
So she wouldn't show up.
No, it's not like Casper.
So he would just sit there.
He would just sit there and hope she'd show up.
What a fucking psycho. That's what we're going to do someday.
I mean, I would also build a house as a viewing point of the most haunted area.
You'll smoke a cigar.
You'll talk to the ghost that isn't there.
Hey, nun. Hey, like how you go with Blaze. Blaze.
Blaze.
Blaze, Blaze.
Nun.
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 Can you bring
I'm sure that's polite.
I'm sorry. That is so
But at least
weird.
Like he was like super acknowledging of the fact that everyone was seeing this ghost.
Yeah, but I mean, he built a whole summer house because of it.
He was 1863 extra.
He was so extra.
Yes.
Did he see the ghost?
Hmm.
Oh, so he had seen her.
He'd seen her, but like then decided to build a house because he got obsessive about it.
So it's not just that she like didn't show up for him ever. It's that like
I think he got a taste and he wanted a gulp. You know what I'm saying? So
yes, I know exactly.
So an eight. Oh, there goes the box.
Sorry, I got to open it.
Look, now I'm outnumbered. I got Eva pouring a bottle of wine. I got Christine cracking open a new box.
This is all I've ever wanted.
You've just wanted to outnumber me in every way. Listen. Nice ASMR of the bladder of a full wine box.
If you say bladder, I swear to God, with the bladder.
That's what it's called.
Stop saying it.
English isn't your first language. You don't know what I'm talking about.
Touche, touche. You know what, Em? You are on a roll with
this. How do you say bladder in German?
God, I don't know.
Blaze!
Oh my God!
Blaise, this is why we had Eva, so she could Google bladder in German.
Eva just Googled bladder in German, and it's almost Blaze.
It's Blaze without the I.
B-L-A-S-E, which actually is Blase, but it looks like Blaze.
For a second, I just saw Blaze, and I was like, this is wonderful.
So Blaze, you're
every circle is closing officially.
Blaze, you're my bladder.
Oh, and you're his liver.
I'm his heart.
Can't live
and
without
he's
you.
My bladder.
Oh,
you know.
I hope you just tell him that without any reference.
He's probably just gonna go, oh, yeah, okay, Christine. Move on. Also, he doesn't fucking listen to this podcast, by the way, which makes me so irritated. So he'll never even know why he.
I was gonna say everyone go attack him on social media, but he also doesn't use social media, so it's not even worth it. Everyone just go to your local hospital, see if he's working. And
go to the emergency room.
Someone's bound to find him.
Yep.
Anyway, actually, we did have one recruit find him in an emergency
room.
Someone
fucking found Blaze in an emergency room. If that's you, if you're listening, someone recognized Blaze in the emergency room and was like, oh, I listened to this podcast and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And her fiance's name is Blaze. And then it turns out it was our podcast. I was like, I've never been fucking recognized and Blaze gets recognized at work. And he doesn't even listen.
Love it.
This is why
I drink.
I drink.
And that's why we drink. Anyway, let's get back to these guys.
Let's do it.
In 1892, so this is 30 years after they've bought the house, and they've been living with this summer home for ghosts. Henry Bull dies, but his son takes over the house. So the family's still living there.
Do you think that... I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Your wine box is blasé. Is showing.
But okay, seriously, do you think when he was passing away that he was like, I'm gonna be a ghost?
That would be fun.
I'm
to
serious.
Be like, none, I'm coming to you, homie,
right? Like, you don't show up for me,
I'm gonna play games. Let's get ready.
Yeah, anyway, that's all I was wondering.
I would like tell my kids, you hang out in that summer house, you're gonna see some weird shit in the nun's walk.
I'm gonna have a lot of fun in that nun's walk.
So he died, his son came back, and his son lived there, and apparently ghost stuff still happened, but they never really saw any proof that maybe he showed up, that the dad showed up.
Okay.
So in 1928, the son has now also died.
Oh, God, everyone's dying. Oh, that's like 30 years later.
And after the son dies, a new family, the Smiths, move in. So soon after moving in, the wife of the Smith family, she was cleaning an abandoned cupboard all the way in the back of the basement that nobody, I guess, had ever touched.
Why?
And the whole time that family lived there, they had never touched this cabinet.
Listen, don't go into an abandoned cabinet in the basement.
Why would you live somewhere for like 60 years and not ever look
cabinet? In our house in Cincinnati that was built in like the 1800s, there are for sure things that have never been touched in there, in the basement.
Ew.
I'm not kidding.
I'm going to touch them all. See you in October.
Whatever's about to happen here is what's going to happen to you.
So she was cleaning an abandoned cupboard and found a brown paper box.
Oh, dear.
And she opened it up and there was a woman's skull in it.
You're welcome for your experience in October.
It's going to be the reason I drink in the week of October 13th. Not because
you my get wedding.
Married. I was looking for some other reason anyway, because I know you're going to steal my thunder that week.
No, sorry in advance.
So... she then began to witness sounds of servants' bells, even though they had all been disconnected for 50 years.
Oh, that is so creepy.
She saw lights appearing in the window, heard footsteps dragging across rooms, and watched furniture move itself.
Good.
They also heard horses neighing outside in the middle of the night. Like,
that's actually super creepy.
Like the headless horse.
I feel like that doesn't sound creepy, but if you're like lying in bed at night and
you hear horses on a path where horses don't go anymore. Yeah,
that's really upsetting. This was all after she found the skull. Like it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this was in like 1930s.
So she like disrupted the skull and then all this shit started happening.
Where I think that's the correlation that this story is trying to make. But I mean, already haunted stuff was happening before ever found a skull. So okay. I don't know if it's because of that. I don't know if that's what amplified it or not.
The skull just happened.
Or maybe she was like one of our people and she just came in and was like, spooky shit is here. And she's just like
open every cabinet. Yeah.
That's what I'm. Yeah,
exactly.
So and her husband was also noticing a lot of stuff. And so they contacted the Daily Mirror newspaper.
The Daily Mirror. Nice.
And they reached out in the paper to contact the Society for Psychical Research, our homies that I talk about often.
That you used to call cyclical.
Yeah, I still regret that. The Daily Mirror sent them a reporter. What in what world was the newspaper sending you people for free?
Well, the Daily Mirror is like
really up and coming in the 1930s.
It's like a tabloid and a half.
So they sent them a reporter who wrote the first series of updates for the Society of Psychical Research. I almost said cyclical. So he went in just to write a bunch of articles about what was going on and then sending it to the main house.
Okay.
So like the whole research team could get used to it.
Oh, okay.
The Daily Mirror also sent them a man named Harry Price, and he was a paranormal investigator and decided to live with them for a year.
A year?
A year. To try and find whatever was going on in their house.
I like how he's like, I'm going to decide to live with you for a year.
I think the Daily Mirror told him to. Like, imagine writing for help and then someone just moves in.
Someone named Harry is like, I'm going to live here for a year.
Rent free, by the way.
And I'm probably going to walk around with like recorders and like watch you sleep.
Oh, I was thinking like walking around, like not doing the dishes or something, but.
And also I won't do the dishes.
Okay, there it is. As soon as he arrived, activity spiraled out of control. Stones were flying at them from inside the house. Vases shattered, screams from the basement, tapping and thuds from a hanging mirror. Even after you took it off the hook, it would still tap and thud in your hands.
Ew!
And the doorbell would go off by itself, even though the wiring had been faulty for years and had eventually stopped working altogether.
It's like that and the servant bell thing really creeps me out for some reason.
Harry Price said he was able to make contact with the Bull family, like the guy who died, the guy who was really into the nuns. Apparently, Harry Price made contact with Mr. Bull, who had died in the house. Although he never said that Mr. Bull or Reverend Bull gave any message, just said like, oh, I made contact with him, and then never brought it up again. here's a weird one that I don't think we'll ever see again. A glass of wine turned into ink.
Okay, hold on. I have a lot of questions.
Can you write with the wine now?
Here's what I have to say. Did the glass of wine turn into ink, or did like the wine in the glass
turn? The wine in the glass turned into... The glass of wine turned into a glass of ink.
Okay, great. Now here's my second question.
Yeah.
Did we discover this by someone taking a drink of their wine and saying, wow, this is fucking ink?
Someone put down their glass of wine, continually sat there, and then went to go grab it again, and this time it was ink. Yeah,
but how do you know that it's ink? I mean...
Because it's dark-ass blue. I didn't talk to him.
I just want to know... I just want to think that he drank it and was like, this is ink.
Oh, yeah, and then he got poisoned and also died in the house. Is that where you want me to go with this? No,
he probably spit it out, but it's way more...
You know how, like, when you, like, a pen explodes in your mouth? Yep. Imagine he realized because his teeth were blue, and he was like, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. I want that to be the visual that I get to keep from this.
I was thinking more like you could use the ink now and, like, write someone a love letter, like with your favorite wine.
Yes.
Really, you could do that with just wine, I guess. Could you?
Yeah, write that down.
Eva, write that down with my wine? Write it down with wine.
Right.
Quick.
But not my wine. Use your own wine.
It has to be a very viscous wine.
Yes, it would
have to have a lot of legs, if you know what I'm saying.
Yep.
I learned a lot from my crossover with Wine and Crime. They taught me quite the description for wine.
Em was really overwhelmed.
I was scared. They were talking about back ends, and I don't know what that even means.
Em was like, there's a back note of chocolate,
there's a dusting of of pomegranate, and then everyone went ooh, and I was like, what the fuck is going on? It was very weird.
You were like, no wonder I was fucking jealous.
I was. They had a vocabulary I'll never know.
That's really funny.
It was like, really funny. Back end, and then
you
I
were
tried
staring
to...
at me like, what do I say?
And you're like, just say nothing. Just be shh. Okay. If you say nothing, they can't hear you. And if they can't hear you, they don't know that you
exactly.
are scared.
And then meanwhile, I'm fishing around for a box of wine. And Emma's like, it's 10 a.m. Stop.
I'm like, I'm already grossed out by who we are. Please don't drink that box wine out of a dirty wine glass at 10 in the morning.
And then you told them.
It was the dirtiest. She literally blew into an old dirty wine glass. She was like, it's fine. Like, clearly had been used and dried.
Emma.
I mean, it didn't happen. Eva, take that out.
Listen, they're gonna hear it in the episode itself because announced it, so you might as well
hear that. Eva,
shout it from the rooftops.
Delete it and then put it back in.
Just delete it and put it in the beginning of the episode and make the volume 10 times louder.
Actually, just put this in and then repeat this 100 times until we've made an hour and a half.
Delete everything else except that.
Write that down with your wine.
Yes.
Not
okay. Mine.
So back to Harry.
Damn it.
I don't even know where I am anymore.
I don't either. Where? What the fuck?
Oh, yeah. Obviously, the wine turned into ink. That's where we were.
Obviously.
So that was the last straw on the Smiths.
The last straw, indeed.
I'd be like, goodbye.
Don't fuck with my wine.
So the Smiths left only 9 months after living there.
Oh, wow.
Next moved in the Foister family.
They sound like a fun gang.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I think so.
Mm-hmm.
And they were cousins of the Bull family who once lived there.
Oh.
So I think they're just getting desperate at this point. And they're like, anyone that we know, let's just get them in the house.
Okay.
So the Foisters surprisingly lived there for a full 5 years. They kept a list of experiences that happened to them in the home.
Oh, like a guest book.
Yeah, but for themselves and the ghosts.
Oh,
I guess.
Oh, okay.
But they kept a list of experiences that happened that were paranormal in the house all the way through 1935. Including bell ringing, window shattering, bottles being thrown at them, bottles being smashed onto the floor, bottles that they never brought into the home appearing on the counter to then be chucked at them by nothing, and getting locked into unlockable rooms.
Bottles of what?
I think anything. Maybe ink wine.
Yeah. I mean, I like the part where you're like, yeah, bottles just appeared. But then not when they just get thrown at you. That's.
But the thing to me, that's very ominous of like, I feel like it knew that they knew that if there was a bottle around, it was going to get thrown at them. So they were already scared. And it was just fucking with them, like creating bottles and leaving them places.
It was like, oh, you got rid of all the bottles in the house?
It's like, I'll just create more and just throw those at you.
Here's a new one.
Exactly.
Well, that's fucked up.
I agree. So ultimately, in that little book where they wrote all the experiences, there were over 2,000 events that occurred in those 5 years.
2,000?
Yes.
Okay.
Which over time also included glass objects appearing out of nowhere, like I said, items going missing, the apparition of Henry and Harry Bull, items like pebbles and an iron flying at them.
Pebbles and an iron.
I mean, yin and yang. Like, you got tired of bottles, so it was just grabbing anything. But a fucking iron?
No, that's terrifying.
That's wild.
My story has an iron in it too, by the way.
Oh, I did that on purpose.
I know.
After an exorcism attempt.
That sounds like it went really well.
The wife, Marianne, began getting thrown out of her bed in the middle of the night. Getting slapped.
It's not funny, but like, what?
Getting slapped 24/7.
Oh my god.
And getting her hair yanked. And fist-sized stones hitting her in the shoulders. She also was almost suffocated by her own mattress. Which is extra creepy on the fact that, like, you have to be on top of the mattress. And a mattress is so heavy that if you were under a mattress, you would know you were.
Well, maybe it pushed her head into the mattress.
Oh, I was thinking it was like that listeners episode where all of a sudden someone was like
underneath a mattress,
like,
or whatever.
Like she woke up and she was under the mattress.
No, she walked out and her little son was underneath a table. No,
a dresser
in the hallway, and he was like three, so he couldn't have like lifted it, but the dresser was like on top of him, and he was screaming.
And it was upside down.
Yeah.
Like, the dresser was upside down sitting on top of him, like, perfectly balanced.
Fucked up.
And that's a listener's story. That's not even something I reported, guys. That's a real thing.
We didn't do it.
We're sorry. Let's see.
Let's see
what else I can throw you.
Let's see.
The kitchen bells, the servants' bells, also used to sound like, and this was according to Marianne, who witnessed it all the time, said that the bells sounded like they were ringing at the exact same time, although based on how they were built, it's impossible for them to be operating at the same time.
Oh, great.
So it was just becoming like a surround sound. There also began to be writing scratched into the walls saying, "Marianne, please help."
Ah!
And mass prayers.
Ew!
And the Foysters would even watch them get scratched into the wall in real time and tried to paint over it, but it would re-scratch itself through. And she started writing back on the wall saying, "I don't understand. Please tell me again or tell me more."
No, don't, no, no.
And then more like illiterate scribbles would show up and then she'd write. So here's one of the.
Is that what the bullshit on the back of your page is? God yes. Damn it.
So this is the scribbles. The Marianne and the scribbles are what something etched into the wall. And the more legible stuff is what she wrote in response.
It wrote that, Marianne?
Yeah.
Did it write this, Marianne?
Yeah.
Ah! Ew! 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 It looks like somebody, like... You know when you write with your left hand, like...
I'm left-handed.
Okay, sure.
Bitch.
Whoa, I'm so insensitive. You know when you write with the opposite hand, it looks like someone's writing that.
Yeah, it looks like chicken scratch, like a child kind of wrote
like
it.
Writing on top of itself. Ugh. That's so the Marianne is creepy.
And then the pink one, uh-huh. It says Marianne light mass prayers. Which
like in Catholicism you light candles at mass.
Oh.
And say a prayer.
Well, that's what that said.
I don't like that one bit.
So the Foysters, due to his health, due to Reverend Foyster's health, the family ended up having to leave 5 years into living there. But a lot of people thought that they got scared out of the house. But they were going through that shit and apparently it didn't scare them enough to leave. They were just like, okay. Like, imagine something just scratching your name into a wall and you're like, I'll just keep hanging out.
So, I mean, I probably would because I'd be like, cool.
You'd be like, oh, let me get my pendulum.
Actually, I'd be like, hey, guys, this is why I drank this week. Someone scratched into the thing. Check out my Instagram. It'll be on there.
You'd be like, let's open up the Ouija board again.
On Facebook Live.
So Mrs. Foyster, this is where people stopped kind of believing in the legitimacy of all of this. Uh-huh. Because she swears that every attempt actually happened at least once. But the frequency of the events that was reported is not accurate because she on her own reported that things happened more often than they did because she was having an affair.
Oh, man.
With the ghost.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm kidding. I'm just fucking with you.
Okay. You really just.
I know. I watched your brain flip itself upside down.
You threw me for such a loop.
But okay. She was having an affair. I guess they opened their house up to lodgers. And so she was sleeping with one of the guys that was lodging in their house.
Oh, man.
And anytime that Mr. Foyster started asking questions, she would use the paranormal explanations to cover up
her
adultery.
Are you kidding me?
So apparently she swears that everything that's ever been reported did happen, but maybe only once or twice, not 5 to 10 times, like she said, because she was using them as excuses. But how do you... Like, oh no, I wasn't kissing him. There was just, the wall was scratching itself.
Here, Blaze, are you listening? No, but if you are, if you ever want to cheat on me, all you have to say is, oh, that person, that weird voice you heard, that was a ghost. Or like that weird text that came to my phone, it must have been a ghost. Like,
Allison,
I would believe it.
Allison, are you listening? I wasn't cheating on you. Just a ghost was throwing stones at me. It's the same thing, actually.
That iron that threw across the room?
Yeah that wasn't fun. Me. That was just your imagination. Okay, so they ended up leaving because Mr. Foyster got sick, which means that the building was vacant again. And guess who moves in but Harry Price, the paranormal investigator who lived with the Smiths for a year.
He's been obsessed since the beginning.
Oh, it gets creepy. So he moves in to conduct his own research and he pays a year-long lease up front to stay there. And in the year 1937, he moves in to conduct his own research and he advertises in the paper for help with his study.
Oh, dear.
This is his ad. haunted house. Responsible persons of leisure and intelligence, critical and unbiased, to join of a group of observers in a year's night and day investigation of alleged haunted house in home counties. Scientific training or ability to operate simple instruments an advantage. House situated in lonely hamlet, so own car is essential.
And let's go.
Okay, but so many people applied to this.
For real?
And he couldn't choose, and so he invited 48 people to live with him in this house for a year.
What?
So there was nonstop paranormal investigation between 49 people for an entire year.
Should I use ZipRecruiter.com/drink?
Yep. Yes.
Sorry. Wait, okay.
But... And if we weren't negative 60 at this point, we would have absolutely joined the team.
Wait, so question. So yeah. All these people were like qualified to
be enthusiasts. I mean, how qualified do you have to be in 1937?
But they weren't just all randos. Like he picked the people.
He picked 48 out of several others because he thought those 48 were the most qualified.
It wasn't just anyone who applied. It was like, you have to at least show that you...
Right. You have to show that you like have a car and know how to operate a machine.
Okay.
At the end of the investigation, after an entire year, they were disappointed in the lack of evidence that they had collected. But they did perform several seances throughout the year and made contact with two ghosts in particular. One of them was Marie Lair, who was one of the nuns that says that she was stuck wandering the property until she had a proper burial.
Wow.
Another one named Sunex Emers.
Yep.
I tried Googling it. There's no like, I was thinking like that's like a demon name or something, but it's not.
That sounds like
someone's name just was that.
Software platform.
Sunex Emers. She was the other one that showed up in the seances a lot, and she warned that the rectory was going to burn down soon and that a murder victim would be revealed.
Ah, the body in the wall!
So almost a year later, 11 months to the date of that conversation, a new family moved in, the Gregson family, and when they moved in, they were unpacking and an oil lamp fell over and burnt down the rectory.
Yikes.
Neighbors swear that while the building was on fire, a nun was in one of the windows of the room that no longer had a floor.
Was she just standing in the window?
She was hovering in the window.
No.
After the fire ended, Harry Price, the guy that's so obsessed with this place. Why are you so obsessed with me? Went back to the site and excavated the ground to see if there was anything underneath, and found remains of a female skeleton certified by pathologists. So just like Sunex Emers said, a murder victim would be revealed.
I mean, so he had a reason to be so obsessed. He knew what he was doing.
He had a feeling. The remains were buried in a nearby cemetery in 1943. And for being so active in this house, Harry Price shot to, quote, paranormal stardom, and was known to... Don't laugh. That's what I'm trying to be.
I'm not laughing.
That's why we have this podcast. I'm trying to reach paranormal stardom.
I'm laughing with you and Zach Baggins.
Harry Price was known to others in the community, though, in the paranormal community, as a total joke.
Aw, Harry.
But to the public, he was considered the father of paranormal research.
Goodness.
And he wrote two books, one in 1940 called The Most Haunted House in England. In 1946, he wrote The End of Borley Rectory. So they were both about his experiences there. But he was considered a joke to everyone else because they realized that as soon as all 48 people were around him all the time, all of a sudden there's no activity going on because he couldn't like do any hijinks without getting caught. But in this grand house with few family members that are all scared, he could do whatever he wanted and probably make it look like the place was more haunted than it was.
Okay.
So the main theory is that he made things look more haunted so his reports would look bigger so that he would reach paranormal stardom.
I mean,
like, he
sense.
Used this house.
Yeah.
After Harry Price died, the English Society of Psychical Research and the London Society of Psychical Research both published their own individual findings that were as such. There were no verifiable events that could not have been natural explanations, and the most popularized events were all caused by Price himself. So pretty much a lot of people think that most of these were just jokes. But the rectory, although it burnt down, there were still remains left, and it was officially demolished in 1944. And Life magazine did a like spotlight coverage on the building. And when they covered the destruction of the building, they did capture a picture of a brick among the rubble hovering feet above everything else.
Holy shit. Ew.
So for as much guff as people gave Harry Price, that is a brick floating by itself in the rubble on the day that it was officially demolished.
And that's a brick for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no. Thank you.
So anyway, that is the story of the Borley Rectory.
Rectory.
Rectal.
Re.
Rary.
All right.
How do you feel?
I feel.
Mentally, where are you?
I feel a little bit like.
Feel a little cheated?
No, I don't feel cheated. I mean, I feel like Harry Price like got a little ahead of himself.
I think Harry Price needed a girlfriend. Or a boyfriend.
Yeah, he needed a hobby aside from this obsession.
Harry Price is someone I, like, I think I love this, my job, and I think I love Ghost so much, but I have to, like, I'm like, what would the worst case scenario be if I really followed my passion? I could turn into Harry Price.
That. Well, and you know what bothers me about that is that it takes away from, like, real experiences and real, where people are like, this guy's clearly making shit up.
Versus the listener story where someone's child was under an upside down dresser in the middle of the night.
And was like, I don't know what to do. And it's like, I just feel like people like that. I'm like, I know you're trying to like prove, you know, but at the same
time. You're backfiring. Don't let Harry Price get you down, guys.
Yeah, it takes away from real experiences. Anyway, that's just my opinion. But
anyway.
Anyway. Oh, am I supposed to talk now?
Now you go.
Oh, God damn it. Just kidding. I'm really excited. I have a really good one for you today.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I'm really pumped about this, actually. And I'm stealing the charger back. I have a themed...
Oh, my. Iron. The iron. Is that the theme?
No. The iron is an element of one of the themes.
What's the theme?
The theme. Okay, here we go. So, I'm going to list the stories first and then tell... Well, first, I'm going to pour my wine.
Wow, nothing has sounded louder in my ears ever. It's like Niagara Falls.
Okay. First, I'm going to list the names of the stories, and then I'm going to tell you what they have in common.
Okay.
Isn't this fun?
Yeah, but how many stories are you about to tell me?
Okay. This is the stories. These are the...
It's like a series.
These are the stories. Bum, bum. Okay. Isidore Fink,
okay,
Joseph Elwell, and Julia Wallace. What these three victims have in common is that they
were killed.
Were all killed in locked rooms with no explanation of how their killer got in and or escaped.
Wow. Okay. Murder mystery.
Yes. Which is a big fiction genre. But actually has roots in real stories. And these are the three stories that are like the main stories that fiction genre has roots in.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yes. They're called locked room mysteries.
Wow. I wonder why.
R.A.M.
Just get going. I want to hear it.
So I was on my favorite website, mysteriousuniverse.org.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an article published by Brent Swanser last week, and it was about these locked room mysteries, and it was published like 8 days ago, and I got real excited. The article is called Mysterious Murders in Locked Rooms, and then I went down a rabbit hole and looked up all these three people, and it's just a wild ride. So let's start with Isidore Fink.
Okay.
So, the year is 1929.
My favorite year of all.
Yes. Isidore Fink is 30 years old and owns a small laundromat in New York City. And he also lived in said laundromat.
Oh.
Because people lived... It was
like
common.
Above it? Or in...
Yeah, no, I think like above it.
Okay.
He lived in like the building of it. So on March 9th, 1929, a neighbor named Lachlan Smith heard sounds of a scuffle coming from Isidore's home and summoned a police officer.
Summons better.
To investigate. But... I wrote called and then I was like, oh, he didn't. He literally didn't call him. He had to go out into the road and find a fucking police officer.
Oh, really?
Because it's 1929 and they lived in a really impoverished neighborhood and didn't have phones.
Like, they had to old school call someone. He had to summon. He had to call with his voice.
He had to call out the window. Yes, exactly. So he summoned a police officer. Anyway.
Okay, got
just,
it.
Just like heads up.
Vocabulary is going to be a big thing in this story. Got
this
it.
This is where we're at. So the officer arrived at the laundromat only to find all the doors locked from the inside. All the windows were nailed shut. None were broken. There was nothing open. They did notice that there was like a little. So picture a front door and then there's like a little window at the top where you can kind of like open the flap and it like lets air in.
Okay.
So they were able to open that. But obviously, like, an adult was not able to fit in. So they did classic 1920s police work.
Shoved a kid in there?
They found a small child. And they said, please climb into this window and, like, unlock the door.
Good.
So they fucking found a... I mean, it's just beyond me.
Did they summon him from the street or...
They summoned him, right.
It's like,
right.
Young boy. Young boy.
They went into the window and called him. So they found this little boy. They were like... They hoisted him up. They had to find a really skinny boy, too, because a normal-sized child did not fit. Like, they had to literally find a skinny, skinny kid and push him through and then say, okay, now unlock the door for us. But this poor kid, okay, so they push him through the, like, the little window. And inside is the dead body of Isidore Fink lying on the floor in a pool of blood. So the little kid climbs in, opens the door for the police. They find... Isidore Fink's body on the ground. He has 3 gunshot wounds. One had been shot close range into his wrist. And so police immediately assumed it was a suicide because obviously everything was locked. But then they were like, there's no gun. Like, they could not find the murder weapon. So they searched the whole house. Couldn't find the murder weapon anywhere. They looked through his belongings. No money was missing. The only fingerprints in the room were Fink's himself and his iron. This is where the iron comes in.
Mm.
His iron was still on. He had been ironing. It was face down on the ironing board on a clothing item and had not been there long enough to burn the fabric it was on. So
they like just got there.
Yes. So it was like that. Like the iron was hot and it was on and was on a piece of clothing, but it hadn't scorched the fabric at all. So.
Like, so he, like, in 60 seconds, basically.
Yeah, basically, like, that quick. Exactly. So they had no idea what happened. They questioned Fink's customers because he was, like, owned a laundromat. And a lot of them had felt apparently really inconvenienced because over the past year he had started locking his door and he would only let people in that he recognized and was super paranoid about getting robbed. But again, they lived in a pretty impoverished neighborhood, so it wasn't that abnormal. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like, they just couldn't, this wasn't a robbery. Like, nothing was stolen from the house. So the case completely and utterly baffled investigators, and to this day, still does. They, you'll like this. They even searched the whole house for hidden doors, secret passageways. Like, they thought.
Oh, I do like that.
I knew you would.
You had me at secret passageway.
They like looked in all the like wallpaper. They tried to find any sort of way that somebody could get in or out. Nothing. And no theory has managed to hold up. One theory at first was that somebody had been able to shoot him through that little window up top.
Mm-hmm.
But the powder burned. So like he was shot on the wrist and you could see like the burn from the gunpowder, which means it was like really close range. So that kind of eliminated that theory. And then the police commissioner at the time, whose name was Edward Mulrooney, called it an insoluble mystery. And basically, their best, this is so ridiculous. I mean, again, they just shoved a small child through a window, so whatever. But the best theory they could come up with was that an extremely thin gymnast had crawled through the tiny window, shot Fink for like some unknown reason 3 times, and then instead of going out the door from inside, climbed back through the small window and escaped. So that was like their best bet, but they were like, there's literally no,
that's our best bet, and we know it's not right,
and we're all laughing about it. Like, It's just so absurd.
Like a little elf just dove right in.
I mean, it might as well. Exactly. So it was just absurd and nobody really knew. That was the most plausible theory that the police could come up with.
Got it.
So I researched the story and then I went and read like, I went on Reddit and read some like theories and like people's thoughts, and some of them were actually pretty interesting. So somebody said, what about the iron? So someone focused on the iron and said, what if, is there any way that the iron could have heated up and steamed up and gotten hot enough to like shoot a shoot projectiles at him, like maybe, I don't know what they were, but into his wrist and whatever, and then he like fell over and died. And I was like, that's kind of absurd. But at the same time, a neighbor said she heard a scuffle and shouting, but no gunshots. So I'm like, maybe something, maybe it wasn't gun, like bullets. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Cause they never said whether they found bullets.
Right.
And then the other theory is that maybe someone was hiding in the room when the police arrived. So someone had come in and he had locked the door and welcomed him in. He was safe, felt safe with him. And then when they went in, he was like hiding, which I think is a plausible theory. And then one of the more sensible theories, in my opinion, is that he opened the door, got shot in the wrist or whatever, and then like, or got shot and was able to close and lock the door before dying.
Okay.
And that actually happened in California a few years ago. A guy opened the door and he was stabbed several times and was able to shut and lock the door before dying, and he didn't have time to call the police. They originally ruled it a suicide. It turns out that he had managed to like close and lock the door before dying.
Gotcha.
So, and then some people think he was killed by a ghost.
Me.
M thinks he was killed by a ghost. Or somebody, actually, if I forget who it was, but like a famous author, I mean, I don't remember the name, but someone who researched this case, a historian, said he thought it was possible that he had physically, because he had such paranoia, that he physically manifested his fears
of
being shot, and somehow,
like, his energy was that strong, he literally created bullets,
which is
and no gun,
yeah, okay,
and shot them into himself. Got it.
Okay, Eva, delete that. just kidding. Because it is a theory. I don't know.
I guess there's no right answer right now.
I'm telling the facts.
There's wronger answers. That's one of them.
This is full of wronger answers. In fact, this whole segment that I'm giving you today is full of wronger answers, because everyone is more ridiculous than the next. So let's move on to Joseph Elwell. So this is around the same time, 1920s. Elwell was a wealthy socialite. He was a professional card player.
Okay. What's happening?
And a playboy.
Oh, okay.
I just want to tell you about his life.
There was a heavy pause on card playing.
I started to think about like a professional card player, and I just got really lost in the thought. Sorry.
What card game would you play professionally?
Oh, I'll tell you in a moment.
Old Maid.
No.
What? I don't know.
Crazy Eights. No, I'm just kidding. Okay, so he was a professional card player and a playboy living in New York City. So he had recently learned the, quote, new card game called Bridge.
Woof. What year are we in again?
1920.
Okay.
And he was also in his 20s. So he learned this hot new game called Bridge.
The newest craze.
So remember how last week, was it last week? We talked about Summer of
the Hoop. The wooden hoop with the
wooden
stick?
Hoop. We talked about Summer of Mahjong. We talked about the Summer of Bridge. It was June. He learned Bridge. It was the Summer of fucking Bridge.
Yes.
We found it.
We found the Summer of Bridge. One by one, we're going to scratch them off.
June 1920, Summer of Bridge.
Eva, log that down.
Add it to the calendar.
Put it on your calendar for June.
Go to your iCal.
Our birthday is the month of Bridge.
1920.
Oh, wow.
Yes. June 1920.
In memoriam. Of Bridge.
Farmer Bob. Okay. So, Summer Bridge?
Yes.
Sure. Okay. So, on June 11th, 1920, Joseph's housekeeper arrives to work, unlocks the door, the front door, and then she's cleaning, and she finds Joseph sitting upright in his living room, in a chair with a bullet hole in his forehead.
Oh, boy.
And he is dead. So, aside from the bullet hole, he looks like he's kind of just chilling in his chair.
All right.
Like, he has a piece of open mail in his lap. He has a pile of unread mail that he's, like, going through beside him.
It's like time froze.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. He's just, like, sitting there in his armchair with mail. And then, better yet, next to the pile of mail, someone had placed the bullet that had shot him in the head upright on display next to the mail.
Weird, like it had done its job.
Yes.
So it's clearly a murder.
Yes, so clearly, this one is clearly not a suicide. So when police arrived, they found every door and window had been locked when the housekeeper arrived.
Mm-hmm.
The murder weapon was determined to be Elwell's own gun, which was a .45 automatic that he kept for defense in the house. And the house was full of expensive belongings and cash. Nothing had been stolen, so...
this was a hit.
Yeah, so there was no motive of burglary. And there was also no sign of a struggle, no sign of a break-in, no fingerprints aside from Elwell's own. And then neighbors also hadn't seen anyone suspicious and hadn't heard anything. So it didn't look like Elwell had tried to fight anyone off. They determined that the bullet had been shot about 3 to 5 feet away at an angle lower than his head. So it was as if somebody was sitting next to him having a conversation mm-hmm. and had kind of like had a gun next
like
to them.
Hiding the gun.
Or just like had it in their lap.
What a crack shot, by the way.
Yeah, it's really fucked up.
Just like square just in the like, forehead and you just kind of guesstimate.
You're like, oh, what's that letter from? And then just shoot someone in the head. Right. So apparently it was like as if someone were sitting right there 3 feet away and had shot him right in the head. But
that's what just look out.
Hilarious.
You laughed.
Hashtag gun control. Am I right?
OK. Yeah. It's 2018. My bad.
Hashtag politics. OK, so police. OK, so this is different from the first one. Police had no issue of finding motive because Elwell had made enemies all over New York City already. He was busy cheating people out of their money, playing bridge.
Cards. Oh, bridge. Yeah. So,
you know what we should do? We should start a Mahjong cheating ring.
Oh, I could get into that.
We would be so bad. I was going to say good. Oh, but
well, put me in a round of Uno and it'll get real funky.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
We did it.
Yeah. Let's do it. Okay.
Okay.
So, okay. So he had made enemies by cheating all these people. He was also sleeping with a bunch of married women, so that didn't help. And according to this article that I read on Mysterious Universe by Brent Swanser, there were so many potential suspects that police did not know where to begin and were, like, overwhelmed with the number of people who fucking hated this guy.
They should have hired an Eva.
Eva would have Googled that shit instantly.
We were really overwhelmed, please. You should take a page out of our book.
Help, we don't know what to do and we are paralyzed.
Just go to ZipRecruiter and get an Eva.
This has all been an ad. ZipRecruiter.com.
Hashtag ad. Hashtag ad.
Hashtag sponsor. Hold on, I need a drink.
How was that for you?
Like, not great because I feel like everyone's watching me.
Oh.
Okay. So... Beep, boop, bop. Okay. Ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba. Ba. So the only way they could narrow... So they were overwhelmed because they didn't have an Eva, right? So they were like, how do we narrow it down? And they decided, like... So the person who shot him must have made him comfortable enough to let his guard down and sit down to have a chat while looking through his mail. Like, it had to be someone...
Right.
Someone close. And then they were like, oh, literally no one fits that bill. Like, there's no one that he knew... where we can be like, oh, maybe this guy came over. Like, not one person.
Not a single person liked him?
No. So they were like, well, we can't find out who did it, but like also we can't find out how they did it. So obviously there was a question of getting into the house. Then there was the question of getting out of the house because everything was still fucking locked. And then, of course, like the display of the bullet, like why?
Maybe it was like a loan shark for all of his bridge.
Maybe
he like unlocked the door to let them in or unlocked the door and uh-huh. they like shoved their way in then they were like, let's just have a talk, and then bang, right in the head.
Yeah, but how did he, like, escape the house?
Did they, like, grab his keys and lock the door on the way out?
No, it was all, like, dead bolted from the inside.
That I don't have an answer for.
Yeah, all of these, by the way, I guess I didn't clarify, but all of these, like, the doors have been, like, dead bolted from the inside.
Where, I thought it was just, like, a key.
Yeah, they needed to be, like...
Got it.
Yeah. So his murder remains unsolved to this day, and was actually the basis of a famous novel by someone named S.S. Van Dyne. And the novel is called The Benson Murder Case, and that's credited with jumpstarting the locked room detective novel genre.
Hmm.
Which sounds like a blast. Like, I need to start reading those books.
I can't believe there's so many versions of a story like
that. No, it's like a huge genre. It started in like the 1930s.
Wild.
Yeah, it's like, I feel like it's sort of like escape room style, like mystery, you know.
Right.
Like, whodunit, how do they, yeah. And then the last one. We gotta end with a woman.
Oh.
Julia Wallace.
Okay.
We're gonna fast forward to Liverpool in 1931. We're not gonna fast forward to Liverpool. We're gonna fast forward to 1931.
We're gonna travel to Liverpool, and then we're gonna travel in time to 1931. Yeah.
Like, think Carmen Sandiego.
Got it.
Sure. Okay. So we're in Liverpool in 1931. Julia Wallace lives in Liverpool with her husband, who is an insurance salesman named William Herbert Wallace. And on the evening of January 18th, 1931, Mr. Wallace arrived at the Liverpool Chess Club, where he was an avid member.
Oh, me too.
Yeah, me too. Just kidding. I only know how to play checkers. I'm so dumb. Okay. Do you know how to play chess?
I love chess.
Really?
Yeah.
I keep asking people to teach me, and no one
else. I'll teach you.
Really?
Yeah.
Will you actually? Because I feel like I've asked so many
people. No, I'll teach you.
Okay.
It's really fun.
I have Simpsons chess.
I have Simpsons chess.
You do?
Yeah. Is it like... we have the same chess.
Yeah, I'm sure we do.
Wow, we're such losers.
God.
We're learning so much about each other through this show.
Let's just like take a moment to gaze into each other's eyes and let everybody just...
And think about how I don't even watch The Simpsons, and yet I have a Simpsons chessboard.
Let's think about it.
Okay, well, I'll teach you with that one then, because that's the one I learned on.
Oh, great.
Well, that's convenient.
I'll have my mom ship it.
Another full circle for us.
We're full of circles.
Yeah.
We're full of full circles.
There it is.
Yep. So on the evening, blah, blah, blah. So he's at the Liverpool Chess Club playing Simpsons chess. That's my tweak of the story.
Oh.
And then he shows up, and this guy who works there is like, oh, you have a phone message. He's like, a phone message? From whom? And he's like, a man called R.M. Quattro.
That's my after-hours name at the chess ring.
The chess ring?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just go back-to-back, head-to-head.
Chess ring, sure. Uh-huh. So, yes. R.M. Quattro, a.k.a. M.
Yeah.
So, he's like, I don't know that person. They're like, here's the message. This guy... wants you to go to this certain address and help discuss an important insurance issue immediately. And so it's a little fishy, because it's like, well, you don't know this person. Why are you going to meet this person at this strange address? But you have to remember, it's a Great Depression, and
right, okay,
everyone's really hard up. And he's like, okay, you know what? If this is like a big deal or whatever, like, I will go to this address to meet this R.M. Quattro. So he got on a train, headed over there, and when he got to the area, so the address that was given was 25 Menlove Gardens East, and there was a Menlove Gardens, like, street or avenue or whatever. So he's like, oh, it's probably over there. So he gets there. He finds out that the address does not exist. There's a Menlove Gardens West, south, and north, but not an east. So it's literally the only one that doesn't exist.
Weird.
He goes around asking if anyone knows of an R.M. Quattro. Nobody knows what the fuck he's talking about. And so finally he's like, I'm going to go home. So he gets home and he sees that the front door has been locked with a deadbolt from the inside. And then when he finally manages, and then he goes to the back door. Back door's also locked. Has some neighbors come over. And then the back door, he tries the back door again, and it opens.
Ew. That's when I'm like, okay, neighbors, I'm staying at your place.
Something's wrong. But so he gets inside, turns on the gas light in the living room and finds the body of his wife surrounded by blood spattered walls. She had been brutally beaten to death. And the blood spatter went at least 7 feet high onto the walls. It was like extremely fucking brutal. Police later estimated that she had been savagely bashed in the head with stunning force at least 11 times by a heavy blunt object.
Fuck.
But they could not find the murder weapon anywhere, and there was no sign that anyone else had been murdered in the home with Mrs. Wallace. So there was no weapon. There was... Nope. What did I just say? That anyone had been murdered in the house? Did I just say that?
It's fine.
I don't know what I said.
It's fine.
Okay. Who the fuck knows what I said?
Either does.
Oh, shit. There was... Okay, so there was no sign that anyone else had been in the house with Mrs. Wallace. There was no weapon, there was no evidence, no witnesses, none of the neighbors reported hearing or seeing anything out of the ordinary. Mrs. Wallace's handbag, her cash, her valuables, everything was still there, so robbery was eliminated as a motive. And then, so obviously people started, like, theorizing, like, oh, this R.M. Quattro person maybe had something to do with it. How was that connected to the death? And so police tracked down everyone with the last name Quattro in Liverpool. And there were several, because apparently it was a common name, which...
Weird. Okay.
Doesn't sound like anything I've ever heard. But yeah, apparently it's a common name around there. And they had absolutely zero evidence that any of those people had anything to do with the murder. So with no other leads, obviously... Husband,
mm-hmm.
suspect number one.
Right.
So, there weren't any reported marital issues between Mr. Wallace and his wife, but some details of the case seem to implicate him as a possible suspect. First off, the call placed by R.M. Quattro had been made at a phone booth 400 yards away from his home.
Ugh.
That would correspond with how long it would have taken him to get from there to his chess club.
Gotcha.
So it was like the timing, you know, was a little fishy. And then there was a testimony of the tram driver who had taken him to the fake address, who claimed that Wallace had seemed suspiciously overeager to make it clear that he was a stranger in the area and didn't know his way around. So he was like, he seemed like he was forcing.
Right. He was making sure I knew that information.
Yes. And then apparently while he was out there in that strange neighborhood, he also talked to a cop, but instead of, asking for directions, he told the cop, the whole story of like getting the call from R.M. Quattro and saying like, this is what he wanted. This is why I'm here. And then he said, oh, it's not 8 o'clock yet, is it? And asked the police officer to check the time. So the police officer pulled out his watch to say, oh, it's 7:45 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of what they based their case on, is that like, oh, well, he was trying to prove like his alibi by saying
right
to this police officer, what time is it specifically? Mm-hmm. You know, but so it wasn't anything concrete, but they arrested him anyway. And then when he was in court, I guess he was a little bit like, he wasn't very personable to the jury. So mm-hmm. they, within an hour, convicted him. Or they decided he was guilty. And he was sentenced to be hanged for the murder of his wife. But there was this new fun rule in England called... Are we in England? Where are we? Yes, oh, Liverpool. God. Yes. Sorry, there were three stories.
No, you're fine.
Yeah, so we're in England. So the appeals rule, like to be able to appeal a ruling, was very new. It was 25 years old at this point. So they basically overturned the ruling and before he was executed and said, like, okay, it didn't really prove that he was the killer.
Right.
So he got...
put in jail?
Freed.
No. Oh, they literally just let him go.
He was sentenced to hang, and then his
I know they were like, okay, we'll just give you jail time.
Oh, no. So his legal team, like, appealed the decision. And got they it. Were like, yeah, you're right. We don't have enough evidence. So they let him go. Because the only evidence was like, oh, he was acting fishy with a tram driver. Right. And, like, the phone booth was 400 feet from his house. But there was, like, nothing concrete.
Mm-hmm.
So they appealed it. They won. And then, obviously, he couldn't live in Liverpool anymore because he was, like, a
wanted man by the public.
Yes. I was going to say that.
He has a bad rep.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
He was a...
People were talking.
People were chit-chatting.
Mm-hmm.
So he moved to the country. And then a couple years later, he had kidney problems. And after surgery went wrong, he died. So he died only a couple years after the death of his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And so any info that he had, he would have taken with him to the grave. And then basically the way people look at it now is that if Qualtro, this like character who left that message, if that wasn't Wallace, it must have been someone that Julia and Herbert, the couple, knew well, because Qualtro would have had to known about Wallace's Monday night chess plans mm-hmm. at the chess club. And despite the fact that this place was like really small and obscure and it wasn't like a well-known thing, and he wasn't like a well-known person either, he was just like a
mm-hmm.
insurance broker, kind of down on his luck, like he wasn't like a big target, and Julia would have had to know that this Qualtro person too, to let him inside and then lock the door, you know,
mm-hmm.
for this person to kill her,
right?
And also she was considered a shy and reserved woman who wouldn't have like let some stranger in the house. So people, you know, theorize, well, he obviously knew so much about them that maybe it was Wallace himself.
Okay.
So some people think, a lot of people think that he made the phone call to the chess club,
mm-hmm.
showed up at the chess club and was like, oh,
yeah,
how weird. And then like placed his alibi, you know, the whole thing. So the 400 yards from the Wallace house, it does sound like he might have done that on his way, but at the same time, what if, you know, some creepy dude knew where they lived and was waiting for him to leave and then called, right. you know? So it's kind of like up in the air whether that was him, Wallace himself, or whether that was a stranger. And then the most convincing evidence that it was Wallace himself was that while he was out in... this area of this like Menlov Gardens or whatever, that he was so adamant about proving that like he was looking for an address. So I didn't really say this earlier, but he was kind of, he talked to like four people to be like, oh, where are we? What address? You know, he was like asking like, where am I? Where's this address? And everybody was like, this doesn't exist. The street doesn't exist.
Right.
He asked a cop. He told a tram driver and a taxi driver, and he was like super aggressive about telling everyone like, I am looking for this person at this address, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, it's like possible that, well, maybe he's just kind of a socially awkward guy who, you know, it's 1931. It's literally like the Depression, and he just like gets this lead of, oh, like, I have this really big insurance claim for you. And he's like, I just need to find this address. Like, maybe he was just desperate enough to say, and he was a little bit hard on his luck. Like, maybe he was just desperate enough to say, I need to get to this place.
Right.
So it's kind of hard to argue either way. A lot of people debate the fact, debate whether or not he was this Qualtro guy. And then in 1980, so obviously so this case went unsolved. And then in 1980... a radio program pointed the finger at a coworker of Wallace's as the killer. So this was like a whole new theory. And the story went that the man who had an alibi of being with his girlfriend on the evening in question had actually appeared at a garage on the night of the 20th, needing his car completely cleaned. And the garage attendant noticed blood-soaked gloves inside the car.
Hmm.
And then in 1980, the radio program I just mentioned tracked down the man's former girlfriend that he had been dating. And she said, oh, no, he wasn't with me at all on the 20th. So, like, his alibi was shot. And so that was, like, another another weird theory. But, again, like, they hit dead ends. They were like, we can't prove that it was right. him. So it just that kind of added to the mystery of, like, who the fuck did this? And right. how, and, like, once again, how the fuck did they get in or out without unlocking a door? Like, it's just so weird. So the murder remains unsolved to this day. So the question really overall, the question most people argue is whether Qualtro was a prop of Wallace as an alibi, or whether it was like a super clever killer who managed to frame Wallace while, you know, executing the murder by himself. And so people still debate this to this day. Author Raymond Chandler, like, famous novelist, was utterly fascinated with this case. He called it, he said it will always be, quote, unbeatable, and he wrote, like, an unpublished manuscript based off this whole case.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and he was, like, completely fascinated by it. And it also added to this whole, like, there was this whole, like, Baroque fascination with these locked door murder mysteries where, like, nobody knows who got in or out or how could they have done it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so nobody knows who did it with any of the above.
Oh, great.
Yes. But a woman recently in 2013, actually, she claims that she knows that it was the husband.
Okay.
And she says she's done enough research to say, and to be honest, when he was opening the doors and the back door didn't work and then all the neighbors came over and then the back door suddenly opened,
mm-hmm.
that's another detail that's like, why was it suddenly not bolted from the inside?
Yeah.
Questionable. But who knows?
Those are good ones.
So many murders!
I don't know what's wrong with me. I think I'm having a stroke.
I know. You seem like you're breathing heavily and like...
Yeah, I don't know what's happening.
Struggling.
Anyway. Sorry about my stroke.
Do you think it might help if I have a...
Geoscope?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Scorpios, are you listening? Hello?
Geo left the room fresh.
Here you go, Geo and Scorpios. Jupiter is in your sign. Exclamation point.
Yay!
I don't know what that means. This approximately one-year transit comes only every 12 years and serves to bring you out of your shell. You're ready to take on the world. This is a time for exploring your needs and pursuing your dreams. Your personality, image, body image, and confidence in yourself expand to new levels with Jupiter.
That's it?
No.
Oh, okay.
Usually you're
just like... I like a dramatic pause. No, I'm taking it all in.
You know, usually you go like...
I know. I dance around it. I want to give a full analysis at
okay,
the end.
Okay, sure. You are seeing whole new possibilities, and your vision of life is panoramic. You are more willing to enjoy new experiences and to rid yourself of those things that have been holding you back from truly living and owning your life, Scorpio.
I like the part about his body image.
I knew you would.
And his confidence. I mean, he definitely has confidence because of all of us here, but I also think his panoramic view of the world is going to change soon because he's going to be a big brother on Tuesday.
He's going to hate himself. He's going to hate everything.
His body image might change. His confidence will drop.
It might. I hope this...
Hopefully he remembers that Jupiter's on his side.
Yeah. You know what? This horoscope might bolster him into really feeling confident.
I feel like I should have known this my whole life, but did you know that all the days of the week are named after different planets?
Yes.
Just learned it today.
Today?
Today.
Are you serious?
I didn't go to a great school. I went to like a bougie school.
Literally, you were talking about how you got laptops earlier.
Yeah, but I didn't Google the planets or weeks with it. I didn't like
Saturn.
They didn't teach me anything important.
Are you serious?
I literally today was like Sunday, sun, Monday, moon. And I like lost my mind. I was like, does everyone know about this? And everyone was like, yeah, we fucking know.
Oh my.
Sorry.
Oh my.
I shouldn't have ended on how uneducated I am, but here we are.
So. That's how we begin and that's how we end. And that's the circle of life. And that's why we drink.
And that's why we drink.
Do we have anything else?
We have our Facebook Live event next Sunday on the 20th.
Well, I don't know when it is. When is it?
8th? 29th?
29th.
At 3 p.m.
Look at us
Pacific go. Standard
it's
Time.
It's already in my calendar. Good for me.
So if you want to hang out with us for an hour.
And you do.
On Facebook Live.
Oh, you'll meet the kitten.
You'll meet the kitten. You can ask us questions. You can do whatever you'd like. You should be on Facebook
you
at 3 p.m.
You can meet Eva.
You can meet Eva.
If she's there.
Will you be there, Eva? Sure. Eva's going to be there.
You'll meet her if she's there. I don't know. It'll be fun.
Yeah. I think that's our only update. CrimeCon is May 4th through May 6th.
I just put in my out of the office request at work. And
I put mine in a long time ago.
Yeah, I forgot. And then I looked at the calendar and I went, oh, motherfucker.
I literally forgot about CrimeCon one day because my boss was like, you're going to be gone on May 4th. What's that for again? And I was like, I don't know.
I got a text from him being like, do we have something on May 4th? I was like, oh, do we? I don't know. Maybe it's our fucking vacation to Nashville where we are doing our first live show. But maybe. I don't know.
That's also coming out of the mind of someone who doesn't know the names or the days are named after the planets. So.
That's a really good point. And then I was like, oh, there was also like a Marvel movie that came out that day. So I was wondering if I took the day off. I was like, what the fuck?
It's a fair point.
Anyway. We love you. What's our email and all that?
Oh, you can find us on our Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, ATWWD podcast, which Eva's now going to be in charge of. She's going to be helping us because we need all the help
we
can get.
I feel like dumping all this shit on her.
Eva, you can run, but not far. But not far.
Gio will catch you. By the way, Gio ran away this morning. Wasn't going to talk about it, but I am now. He ran away and it took my brother and me. Took my brother and I like maybe 20 minutes to get him back. Found him on the porch of a neighbor looking for cats. And he ran into the road as a van was coming. And I was like, Gio's about to die. And yeah, I know that I haven't trained him well enough. I put him through all the advanced training. He still won't come.
At least he's excited about cats for Tuesday, you know? Yeah, until he realizes he'll have one. Then he's like, oh, this was not worth
then
it.
Then he wants to eat it, probably.
So Eva's going to be attempting to handle the social media while we can actually, like, personally reach out to you guys and comment and all that stuff, because the back end is just a wild time. The Wine and Crime podcast taught me the word back end, by the way.
Back end chocolate notes of legs and
God. We also have an email, and that's why we drink at gmail.com, where you can send in your personal stories. We do a listeners episode at the first of every month. We have our website, and that's why we drink.com. We have our store, and that's why we drink.bigcartel.com. We
love
you.
Is that it?
I think so.
Twitter?
Twitter, oh, Facebook, yeah, Instagram. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And we also, like we said, ATWWD as a CrimeCon code if you still plan on attending.
Oh, wait, Eva, what's your social media?
Yeah.
Oh, what's my social media? It's Ew Gross on those things.
Okay, EW Gross?
Yeah, it's usually.
How many? Okay, I was going to say, I feel like there's more than one, two S's.
EW Gross with three S's. S's. And get to know Eva.
She's a gem.
Get to know us. We're all right.
We're also gems.
Oh. And
that's
why
we
drink.
Bye.
Okay.